You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
This is the Garibaldi Gazette, a weekly podcast about Nottingham Forest. Coming up, we'll give transfer chat the wide one as Reds look to bring in two wingers. Brentford, Tony narrative was too strong for Forest, whose wall was too weak. We'll see how many Lyle Taylor references we can cram into our Bristol City preview. There's an AFCON update and Nuno Tavares. We're Forest. We hug trees. We don't snog dogs. Resisting the urge to scream, "I told you so," in the face of any passing Ghanaians, this is the Garibaldi Gazette. And we've made it to a second episode. Thank you to everyone who joined us for Ep 1. It's available in the archives if you want to catch up. Be a dear, leave us a 5-star rating and some nice words on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's the best way that you can help us grow this show. It is me, Matt Davis Adams, and I am back with Asha Ali. How are you doing, Asha?
I'm all right. I'm a bit of a lack of sleep, so I'm probably going to be grumpy, but there's a lot to be grumpy about.
There sure is, yeah, and you will get a lack of sleep if you just keep hitting refresh on Fabrizio Romano's Twitter page, which is, I'm sure, what Nick Miller has not been doing for the last 24 hours. How are you doing, Nick?
Yeah, I'm all right. It feels like it's incumbent on me to be the kind of active and energetic one if Arsh's energy levels are running low.
Please, Nick.
Okay, cool.
All right, we'll see how that goes. We've also got a very special guest with us today, too. Once the jewel in the crown of the Two Stars podcast, you'll know him better as the Athletics Forest correspondent. It's Paul Taylor. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. Paul's going to help us reflect on the Brentford unpleasantness later. But first, let's get into some news. So it's been a busy 24 hours or so, Paul, in terms of the transfer window. We wondered what Forest would be doing. Gio Reyna, potentially in on loan from Borussia Dortmund. What can you tell us about this one?
Yeah, it's a player that Forrest have been keen on for a few weeks now, but it seems to be progressing in the last few days. He would tick a heck of a lot of boxes for Forrest right now because he can play on either side. He can play centrally as a number 10, and he would add to that area of the pitch in that forward three behind the striker where they've got some good quality, but perhaps not a lot of strength in depth. And he's a really, really bright young talent, 21 years old, regarded as being one of the best young players to come into the US men's national team for some time. And if he can get it over the line, he'd be a really exciting signing, particularly if it would end up being a loan with a view to a permanent move further down the line.
Asha, I was a bit concerned when I was reading about the fact that he fractured his leg during the summer and thinking, do we need another player with injury problems? But the other side of this is that had he not had injury problems and only started twice for Dortmund this season, we wouldn't be getting him. So it's there's two sides to the coin, as somebody would say.
I think he'll fit in well if he's had a fractured leg or he still has a fractured leg. I think he'll fit in well here. I honestly, I'm not going to come on here and sort of pretend that I know everything about him. I don't. I obviously knew his dad in terms of him as a player. I know a little bit about the weird controversy that sort of happened with the kind of the national team coach and all of that sort of weirdness, which is, I guess, a slight red flag. But at this point, you know, getting anyone through the door and anyone sort of, especially a winger as well, because it feels like we set up to play with wingers earlier on in the season and we didn't really have many of those. And as we've sort of discussed, you know, Callum Hudson-Odoi, you know, you're sort of always hopeful that he's not, you know, walking into a room with no lights on with many, many, you know, obstacles around because you're not sure he's going to come out of that well. So yes, him and the Ajax lad that we tried to sign, I think, or we were linked with whilst he was at Manchester City. Is that correct?
Yes, we did. We'll come on to him in a sec and see what Paul knows about that one. But just finally on Reyna, Nick, there's a reason Forrest have been linked with him, right? And it's because he's recently got a new agent.
He has recently got a new agent. He is in the stable of Uncle George Mendes. This is one of the kind of the drawbacks of sort of working in the industry that I work in, because when I first saw this transfer, I thought, oh, this is great. Yeah, as everyone says, you know, exciting young player playing a few different positions. And then I started asking people who watched Dortmund in the Bundesliga this season, and my enthusiasm was kind of doused with cold water. Apparently, he's very keen to be a number 10, and, you know, we've got one of those. So, you know, that's setting my kind of paranoia alarm bells off a little bit. But yeah, as Arsha says, Dan Paulus says, it's in theory a really good signing. But do theories always work? Not sure.
Not in terms of Forest transfers, very rarely, in fact. What about the next player who Arsha mentioned there, Paul? I'm going to call him Carlos Roberto Forbes Borges, because I've seen people call him Carlos Forbes and Carlos Borges. This is a player who was at Man City's academy, wasn't he? And Forest have tracked him for a while, and he might be available from Ajax.
Yeah, I mean, they wanted him back in the summer, as we've previously mentioned. I think they made some efforts to try and sign him from Manchester City, and it didn't happen. But now they've revisited it, and there's a potential loan signing again. It would make a lot of sense at a time when they're probably, how do we phrase this carefully, probably wise not to be trying to antagonise the Premier League too much by making a host of big money signings. If they could get a couple of loan signings over the line during the window, it might be a way of adding a bit of strength and depth to their squad without, you know, being seen to be pushing the boundaries by signing yet more players for a lot of money. And I do expect that they'll try and move a few players out before the end of the window as well. The important thing for Forest is that they end the window with a negative balance, if you like. If they can make a small profit in the window, it will do them a lot of favours towards persuading the Premier League that they're taking these charges seriously when it comes to their FFP breaches.
So if we move on to outgoings then, Paul, Emmanuel Dennis to Watford, going on loan by the looks of it, doesn't have an option for a permanent move. Please tell me that at least Watford are paying the majority of his wages.
I hope so. There's actually some reports that he's going to take a big pay cut, and I'm not quite sure how that would work, given that he'll be contracted to Forest for X amount of wages. I can't imagine he's going to allow Forest not to pay him those. Yeah, I mean, it didn't work out for him at Forest, did it? So getting him anywhere where they're paying a portion of his wages is a big success, really. And good luck to him, because it was good for him at Watford previously. And I always have a theory that sometimes players fit at specific clubs, and he clearly fits there. And if we're entirely honest, didn't really fit here, did he?
Now, Arsha, I kind of think of him as the poster boy for Forest scattergun recruitment last season. He's been out in Turkey at Başakşehir, and he hasn't scored for them, and he's contracted to Forest till 2026. So we've got to hope that this loan goes well.
Yeah, I mean, he was just an odd signing, wasn't he? You know, like at the sort of beginning, that sort of, I can't remember who came first, whether it was him or Jesse, but it's sort of, that's when it sort of heralded the kind of change in direction, or the adding of a different direction into the recruitment. But he was a sort of odd signing. And I've got a friend who's a Watford season ticket holder. And you know, when you sort of talk to those kind of friends and you sort of say, oh, you know, what's he like? You're always absolutely dismayed when they sort of come back at you with this kind of glee. Oh yeah, have him. Yeah, yeah. 20 million. Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. You should totally have him. You should totally go for him. But again, they sort of, like us, didn't really know what he was. He wasn't really a winger, and he wasn't sort of a striker. So what was he like? You know, was he sort of, you know, under the kind of dreaded, in quotes, you know, a forward? You know, what's that? Well, you know, it just didn't really sort of work. But I think it's a little bit harsh, because it's not as if he didn't try. Like, he definitely was someone who tried. He probably just tried too hard. You know, when he did get the chance, you sort of see him and, you know, he'd make a good run and he'd sort of get out a fullback, but then he'd hold on to the ball too much and the move would be dead and, you know, just a few too many kind of step overs and things like that. But I think it's probably a little bit harsh to call him the poster boy for you know, that scattergun thing, because I think that award belongs to Jesse Lingard, surely. But, it you know, it's close, but definitely Jesse Lingard.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'm defending Forrest or trying to desperately cover my own ass here, but of the 22 signings, I thought at the time he was one of the better ones. I think probably took the slightly more optimistic view of, we don't know what he is, by saying, well, he can play up front, he can play out wide, he's a kind of alternative to Brennan Johnson. You could have a three-man attack with him as one of the wide players. He could play through the middle. and I really liked him at Watford. So it was a huge personal disappointment. And I think we can all agree that's the most important thing here. When I watched him, you know, several times as far as being unable to trap a ball by sort of November, December time, it was one of those things where I actively felt sorry for the guy because he was, as Archie says, probably trying a bit too hard and just looked absolutely lost. One of those players who, you know, previously, well, I thought previously had looked pretty good, but when he came to Forest, he looked like he hadn't seen a football before. Maybe that's just the kind of the gaping maw that is Nottingham Forest and previously promising strikers. But as Archie said back there, I'm a little bit harsh to call him the poster boy for the scattergun approach, if only because I thought he was going to be quite good.
Well, also probably John Joe Shelby's the poster boy, but I don't think anybody really wants that poster on their wall. Morgan Gibbs-White to Newcastle, Paul. That feels like tabloid talk to me, because on the one hand, we're hearing that Newcastle can't really spend any money because of their own FFP concerns, and it would cost an awful lot for anybody to get Gibbs-White out of Forest at the moment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. I spoke to somebody at Forest yesterday who, whilst they're fully aware that Morgan Gibbs-White is the kind of player that somebody like Newcastle will very probably be looking at and, you know, perhaps craving, the reality is that Forest spent, you know, they had a transfer fee that could be worth ultimately £42 million to sign him from Wolves. He's been very, very good. He's been one of Forest's most important players. He's creatively brilliant. He's got that little bit of magic. He was vital to their survival last season, and he very much will be this season. So it would take a truly eye-watering amount of money for Forest to even think about signing him, certainly during this window, because he is so important to their survival. I think even if Rayner does sign, you still need Morgan Gibbs-White, because he is just the talisman of the team. He's their most important player. He's probably certainly one of the two or three players you definitely would not want to lose this January if you do end up having some kind of points deduction and needing to win a lot of games between now and the end of the season to survive. So while the dynamic might be slightly different in the summer, for now in January, it's hard to see Newcastle, for the reasons you've mentioned, coming up with a kind of bid that would make Boris sit up and take note and even consider selling him.
And what about Nuno Tavares? We've all seen and been repulsed by the video of him kissing his dogs this week. Marseille want to take him on a permanent, do they? But Forest don't want to end the loan, despite of the unpleasantness that we saw.
Unpleasantness. Well, you might have noticed me on this very Zoom call a moment ago trying to push my dog away as he tried to get some affection. He's now sat sulking just by me, looking at me forlornly. I wouldn't say I was about to stick my tongue down his throat by any means, but still, I have no wish. As dog people, I think we're a different breed, for want of a better phrase. I don't generally snog my dog on a regular basis, but if that's what Nuno wants to do with his mutts, then that's down to him. It's better than kicking a cat, isn't it? Should we go down that? As for his future at Forest, you know, I still think Nuno's making up his mind on him. He seems to have used him a few times in recent weeks, and he's been okay. He's not pulled up any trees. He's done his job. I'm still not convinced about him defensively, but he does look good going forward. I think he could have a part to play between now and the end of the season, and it would be very Forest to give themselves a problem in January in that position, wouldn't it, if they do let him go?
Yeah, we'll be back to left-back issues that we saw before Alan Rogers made his breakthrough as Stuart Pearce's replacement. I'm aware we've taken up a lot of your time already, Paul, so before we let you go, is there anything else that you can tell us on the profit and sustainability stuff? Presumably that's just all in process with lawyers from both sides trying to hash out a deal, and do you think it's going to be April before we hear anything on this?
Yeah, probably. And the thing is it's almost impossible to predict what's going to happen, purely because it will be a different panel this time that hears or looks at Forrest's case than the one that studied Everton. So, you know, while it's easy to make the comparison and say Everton got 10 points for a breach, you can't say that the same thing is going to happen to Forest, because these people might have a completely different opinion, and it is a very different set of circumstances. They could end up with a fine. They could end up with a few points. They could end up with 10 points. It's really, really difficult to say. And this is what really is at the crux of the difficulty of this. You understand why the Premier League want to get it resolved between now and the end of the season, why they want to have a level of urgency involved. But they've actually given themselves a problem, because they've got so many cases that are mounting up now already. that they themselves might struggle to have the resources legally with their own legal staff and the people that deals with these things to get them all done before the end of the season. So to me, I have genuine concerns that by the time the end of the season comes round, we could have a very chaotic situation where there are several clubs who don't know with any degree of certainty as appeals go on and whatsoever. They don't know with any degree of certainty what their punishment will actually be. And I fear we could end the season in a position where there's still a lot up in the air and it could all get very, very messy. That's just my personal opinion. That's what I fear. But I hope Forest don't get embroiled in that kind of thing, because it would be an awful way to have your fate decided. Whatever you think about Forest spending, whatever you think about the 42 signings they've made, whatever you think about their recruitment process, for them to end up in a situation where their fate could be decided off the pitch and they might not know until, you know, after the last ball's been kicked is very troubling for me.
Going to get very litigious, I think. Nick Archer, is there anything else you wanted to ask Paul before we let him go?
Is your throat all right, Paul? You sound a bit croaky. That's the only thing, really. Just concern for my colleague, that's the...
If you're genuinely concerned for my welfare, I've had the cough since November and I'm now on a course of antibiotics.
Oh, my God.
Yes. I'm permanently Sean Dyche rather than just Dyche after...
Well, you know, at least you're not on antibiotics for pooch smooching. You know, because that's the thing I thought of when I saw that, you know, Tavares thing. I just thought... And also, there's no other way of talking about this, you know, except for in a Nottingham accent, really. It feels like, what are you doing, mate? What were you thinking of doing? What were you doing there? What was that about, mate? What are you on about? Why are you kissing dogs, mate? Why are you smooching pooches? Don't do that.
It is baffling as to why he would allow that to come out in public. I have no idea.
This is the thing, though, isn't it? It feels like, you know, that's probably like a little sort of old man gripe you can have with the sort of modern world these days, you know, to share something, you know, share. It kind of just means something else, doesn't it, to this kind of other generation? It used to mean like, you know, enjoy things with others. But I mean, I could have done without seeing that, you know, and as I'm sure many, many people could have done without seeing that.
It's in the same sort of category as Paul Scholes biting his daughter's toenails. Have you not seen this?
Yes, yeah. Or Patrice Evra licking that raw chicken also came to mind. And I've just Googled it, by the way, and it is a myth that dogs have antiseptic tongues, so there's not even any mitigation.
Cats do. Cats totally do.
And dogs, no. There you go, Paul. We've hopefully imparted some knowledge to you, as you have to us today.
I never thought I'd be discussing the antiseptic qualities of animal tongues.
That's what we do here, Paul. Yeah, that's what we do here.
I look forward to the Athletic long read on it coming soon. Thank you so much for joining us today, Paul. We appreciate your time. We'll speak to you soon.
No problem. Take care.
Many thanks to Paul. Follow all of his excellent work on Forest on The Athletic. I'm afraid we must head to the GTEC, metaphorically, next. Brentford 3, Forest 2 then. That was annoying, wasn't it? Reds supporter and author David Marples was there. He sent us this dispatch from West London in the form of a voice note.
Well, good evening, chaps. This is Brentford calling. Now, well, if I sound a bit deflated, well, that's because I am. In many ways, it was a day of missed opportunities. Before the game, me and a few friends were having a convivial pint or two by the river, a fresh winter's evening, dripping with possibility and hope, and along out of the blue comes Matt Hancock having a little jog along the water's edge. I realised just too late as he ambled very slowly, I might add, off into the distance like some scuttling cockroach. Because he'd already gone, the best I could do was mutter something mean under my breath rather than take an opportunity and maybe, you know, say something even nastier to his face. Anyway, off we popped to the angular stadium, boxed in by a series of irregular triangles, whereupon we had our wallets inspected. Yes, wallets. Is that allowed? I'm not sure that is allowed. It reminds me of the time at Bournemouth. I'm not sure what's worse. Steward tapping down my bobble hat at Bournemouth after a double search to ensure nothing was secreted underneath. That or a wallet inspection? Who knows? A silly light show, reminiscent of the kind that heralds the arrival of some band like Little Mix on stage at the O2, perhaps supported by Blue or someone of that ilk, or Another Level or 911, or obviously somebody much more contemporary than that.
We will shortly be arriving at Sandy.
Which is lovely, the home of the RSPB, I believe. Out the team trotted with sexy salmon shorts, and we were treated to Danilo Golden Goal. And then, well, significantly less fun things happened. We can gnash our teeth at the overcooked redemption story of the returning Ivan Toney and his shenanigans, but, well, this was very West Ham away. 3-2 away defeat, not a huge fan, I have to say. There were some good things, 2 away goals, always nice. Some not so good things, allowing the opposition to score 3 goals, 2 of which were, on first viewing, entirely avoidable. Ben Mee rising like a salmon, not really, not even rising, to head home and giving Neil Maupay the chance to hone his much missing finishing skills. If you need a win, if you need a helping hand to celebrate, call Dr. Sexy Forest, who will tend to most of your needs. Still, at least we can now concentrate on the cup. Just for giggles, the tube station closed for trains back into London, so I had to go the literal extra mile to get back to King's Cross. You could put something here about a beleaguered transport system, equating with something to do with a Forest defence. On the other hand, I have just successfully ripped out a label from the inside of my thermal top that's been bugging me all day. So, silver linings and all that.
Thank you to David for that lovely contribution. David is the author of The History Boys, 30 Iconic Forest Goals and Reds and Rams, which you can pick up in all good bookshops. He's also the editor of the award-nominated fanzine Trevor Francis Tracksuits and writes an excellent blog. Find out more on his Twitter page, which is at David Marples. Arsha, shall we start with the positives? That was a lovely goal from Danilo. Chris Wood's continuing his fine form. And yeah, maybe let's just not talk about any other aspect of the game.
And that's it, isn't it? Should we move on? Like, that Danilo goal, though, was like special. That's what we want to see more of. Like, I don't know. It feels like it was kind of, I'm probably wrong about this, but it feels like it was around this time last year that he started bubbling up. That might be wrong. But obviously his kind of strong end to the season really helped. And I think if he could get into that kind of form and have a strong end of the season, I think we'll be okay. And Chris Wood, what can you say about Chris? He's making us eat our words, and those words are tasty. He really is making us eat them. 15 million and he just sort of, I love it because I like playing as a striker as well. So those kind of, tap-ins are just, they're just great. They just destroy the opposition, or they should. So it's nice to see those two. But, beyond that, collectively, they sort of played all right. And if they'd have had a lot of those players that were missing, then it could have been a different outcome. But, it was Ivan Toney Day.
It was kind of gross watching it unfold, I thought, Nick, actually. But, he scored the free kick, that he moved the foam and he moved the ball. And we know that that is a thing that lots of clubs do now, thanks to that piece that's gone up on The Athletic today. But, Forest were culpable themselves, right? Defending from set pieces has been a problem all season, and it was writ large in this game.
Yeah, for all the complaints about the moving of the foam and the moving of the ball and all this kind of thing, which I don't know, maybe I'm as bad of a fan as some people on Twitter say I am, but I just couldn't get annoyed about that. Partly because it was pretty funny, but also partly because it was so stupid to sort of fall for that as well. I think he moved it. There was that bit where Ryan Yates, where Turner set the wall and then Yates turned around and said, "Are you sure about this? He's probably going to curl it around the wall low." And I think he did actually, to be fair to them, he did actually move it after Turner had kind of rechecked the wall. So, the element of skullduggery there. But even so, A, it's really amateur stuff. And B, you could see exactly what was going to happen. And so it's hard to get annoyed at anyone other than the Forest defence and the Forest goalkeeper for conceding that goal. Part Ivan Toney, part the power of pure uncut narrative. But yeah, as you say, Matt, do you think people kind of remembered why he was banned? People were talking about him like he was some kind of incorrectly prosecuted postmaster or something, rather than the bloke who broke the... There are, some rules about what players can and can't do that are quite, that there are sort of grey areas and, is it unprofessional? Is it actually against the rules? Blah, blah, blah. But betting on football is just one of the things that you know not to do. And, there obviously is a different element to it with, if he really did have a kind of a problem, and, we all hope that he gets the help he needs with that. But it did seem to be the kind of the great, glorious return of the unjustly persecuted Ivan Tony, rather than here's a guy who got banned for doing something quite silly.
Yeah, if you had no idea, if you had absolutely no idea, like you say, you would have had to have gone and found out the genuine reason why, because it was that, wasn't it? It was sort of soaked in kind of heroic redemption montage, and they were playing like the Undertaker's music and all this kind of stuff. It was just really bizarre. Like, honestly, if you didn't know, you would have thought that he'd sort of gone away and, you know, decided to take 8 months or whatever out of football and gone to sort of change the world for good.
Be gone on some kind of Buddhist retreat or something.
Yeah, or not even that, just like, you know, like he's gone around to kind of like find solutions for, like, you know, the world's sort of little problems, you know, like finding a solution for like unreachable remote controls, you know, or like, you know what I mean? Like, or like how to defeat like that sweat underneath your toast, you know, just little things like that, just real actual things that would have changed the world. But no, you know, and it wasn't as if it was on like, you know, a kind of a television network that, you know, has its affiliate betting company that, you know, and it could have sort of left itself open to accusations of glorifying gambling. Then that's not what happened. Oh, wait. You know, and also Brentford as well, like they've got thanks to give to the gambling gods, haven't they, really? So I wasn't surprised that they didn't sort of, you know, give it any kind of modicum of seriousness. But yeah, I mean, it was just kind of disappointing, the lack of like gravity. And like you say, like, you know, it's like this is a kind of industry that can have like a devastating, like debilitating effect for most people. So it was just bizarre just to see it treated like that. There's no doubt that he's a really good striker and that the Premier League is a better place with him, you know, but the implications of his offences and the kind of punishment, it should have been treated with some seriousness.
The other thing is that, sorry, this is a Forest podcast. It's not, you know, about Ivan Tony. But he's also not been particularly shy about saying, well, you know, yes, technically I am a Brentford player, but pretty soon I'll be playing for the club that, you know, I truly deserve to play for. So thanks very much for standing by me during this time, Brentford. But I will be doing one at the earliest possible opportunity when Arsenal or Chelsea or whoever it is come in. So if I was a Brentford fan, I wouldn't be particularly kind of impressed that the your star player has kind of absented himself from the team for 9 months or whatever it was. And then when he comes back, he's saying, well, I'll be here for a little while, but, you know, hopefully not too long, lads. Cheers for the welcome back anyway.
And just to sort of go back to that goal as well, I completely agree with you, Nick. Like, I was the same. I didn't understand the outrage. Like, in the game, it was probably one of the sort of more impressive moments. It was kind of impressively arch and sort of cunning, wasn't it? You know, I watched it back, and if you look at it, you know, where he moves the ball to is actually probably closer to where Damsgaard actually gets fouled. So I just don't really have any kind of bones with it. But I guess that's probably something that kind of is a bit of a peeve about football anyway. Like, why isn't anybody getting like annoyed about like the extra yards that people nick, you know, for a throw in? Like, because if you work that back, you know, sometimes that's the start of a goal, but no one, you know, no one cares then. Or what about, like, my special peeve is corner taking. You know, when they get the ball now, it's this thing now, it's in vogue where they sort of get the ball and it's not even touching that paint in that quadrant. You know, and then you get the stupid linesman who comes over and sort of gives it the kind of emperor's new clothes nod. You know, yeah, mate, that looks legit. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, take it, mate. And you can clearly see it's nowhere near, you know, but no one cares about that. So I guess it's, you know, when there's a big event, you know, people care.
Always nice to hear the word quadrant, I think. Don't ever hear it about anything but the little area where the corner is taken from. Just on sweaty toast as well, I mentioned this on Twitter a while back, and somebody said if you put it on a warm plate, you don't get the sweat underneath it. But it needs a lot of planning. That feels like a bit too much work. Give it a try. Let us know at the Garibaldi Gazette. We'll see if anybody manages to prove that theory.
That was Ivan Tony who said that.
All right, we don't have to talk about Brentford again this season, and I think we can all agree that's a good thing. Okay, there are a couple of ways that you can support our podcast. As I said earlier, you can give us a nice review and a 5-star rating wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend. And if you're able, you can help out our charity partners. The first of which are Hope Nottingham, who offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest. And the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, just visit localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. We'll provide a link to that in the show notes too. Right, listener, you'll be aware that Forest have 6 players away at the African Cup of Nations. Maybe not for much longer, though. Ivory Coast, they only finished 3rd in their group behind Equatorial Guinea and Egypt. They got slapped 4-0 by the Guineans. This is embarrassing, Nick, isn't it, for everybody associated with it, including Sangare, Bolly and Aurier. Aurier was an unused sub in this game, but host nations generally don't go out in the group stage of this competition. This is not a good look.
Yeah, I mean, but it's sort of finally depressing kind of viewing everything through a kind of parochial prism, because this is a... I might be on my own on this in this particular podcast, but it's been a magnificent tournament. I've enjoyed it enormously. But I am always also left thinking, well, Ivory Coast can embarrass themselves all they like if our players come back a few weeks earlier. So, yeah, from that perspective, I think at the time of recording, we don't really know whether they are going to go through. By the time people listen to this, they might, because it's the last set of games. Boffins that I know have told me they've got a fairly strong chance of actually going through. So we might be waiting a little bit longer for Bolly, Sangare and Aurier. I mean, it feels weird given that Bolly was one of the... At the time, just going back to what we were talking about earlier on, Bolly struck me as one of the kind of poster boys for the scattergun transfer policy last summer. But as it turns out, we're all kind of very giddily excited to have him back. To just, you know, he's quite a sort of reassuring presence, which I really didn't see coming.
There's two sides to this, isn't there, Archer, I think, because as Nick says, Bolly's an important member of the Forest squad and we certainly could do with him at the moment. But I was kind of hoping that this tournament would be an opportunity for Ibrahim Sangare to play himself into a bit of form, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case given the team that he's playing in and the results that they're getting.
No, I mean, I haven't been totally all over this AFCON tournament just because I've been working, but, you know, and the times I have tuned in, it has happened to just be an Ivory Coast game, so I'm probably getting the worst of it. I'm getting the most unwatchable bits of it. I mean, this is a conversation you can sort of wind back and sort of say, you know, what did they see him as when they signed him? Because it's sort of, we thought we knew what he was, because he was always sort of described as a sort of, you know, a destroyer, you know, someone who disrupts in the middle. And if you'd have seen him play for PSV and also for Toulouse as well, when he was there, like he was that, you know, he was kind of box to box, but he was definitely someone who would sort of sit a little bit deeper and with these kind of telescopic legs. But then when he arrived at Forest, it was sort of like, he sort of only got like one or two games in which to sort of display that talent. And then I can't remember who it was against, but there was a game where he was just basically as a number 10, which was so bizarre to see him really pushed up high and not really sort of, yeah, you know, winning the ball back a few times up high, but not sort of making an impact there as well. So he's definitely a player that I feel he needs to be figured out. And to be fair to him, before he left for the tournament, I think Nuno had sort of gone, okay, I think you're this. And then obviously, you know, sort of coitus interruptus, you're off to the AFCON. So we'll see what happens when he comes back. But he's definitely a player that needs sorting. But again, you know, the tournament as a whole, the bits I have seen, I've never seen such gratuitous use of the stretcher and of that little sort of golf cart thing, you know, that takes them off, you know, especially like when, you know, if it's either taking them off or it's crashing into the actual player who's injured. Did you see that clip? Brilliant. That's brilliant. But that is about as much insight as I can offer into AFCON.
So pretty much as we need, I think. Cheick Kouyaté came off the bench for Senegal against Guinea on Tuesday. Had left their camp after the death of his father. Senegal finished top of their group. Ola Aina and his Nigeria side are in for the last 16-2. Nick, I guess that might affect what we were talking about earlier with Nuno Tavares, because Aina's cover for left-back, right? So the further Nigeria go in the tournament, maybe the greater the need for Forrest to get some cover in that position or keep some cover.
Yeah, it would be a classic Forrest move if they were to, you know, send Tavares back and be left with one left back, and it would be three right backs at that point without Ola Aina. So yeah, I mean, Nigeria have the look of one of those teams, the classic look a bit ropey in the group stages, but get through and then kind of grind their way to a series of victories in the knockout stages. Whether they, you know, whether they do that, I'm not sure, but I don't think we should be sort of relying on Ola Aina being back anytime soon, put it that way.
All right. Well, he's definitely not going to be involved on Friday when Forest head to Bristol. We'll preview the FA Cup tie next. So the Reds going down the M5 to take on Bristol City in the FA Cup fourth round on Friday night. First visit there since Lyle Taylor night, Arshar. We can't really call this fixture anything but the Lyle Taylor game, right? Where does this rank in terms of priorities for you for Forest for the season?
In terms of where we are now, very, very low. You know, I mean, it'd be great if we were going into a game like this, you know, with an actual squad to rotate. But that's not going to happen, you know, unless you sort of stick a Sapa Osong in or give Brendan Aguilera a go. But yeah, I mean, just going back to that game, I think that I remember that game quite vividly. And I remember coming away with the feeling of, oh, something's cooking. Something's happening here. This might be real. Like, I'm not going to sit here and sort of pretend that I, you know, didn't give up on that game at one point. You know, it was much like this. I was sort of filming away and I was in a hotel and I had an early pickup the next day, you know, like 5 something in the morning. So I had it on, I was watching the game, but I'm not going to lie, I did give up and I went to brush my teeth and I came back and the game was on its like pink-haired Lyle Taylor head. And, you know, I don't think in that moment, I don't think I've ever wanted to hug a Tory as much as as much as I did in that particular moment. But of course, we mustn't do that. We mustn't hug Tories because it's probably quite a cold and soulless embrace. It's probably more like, do you remember Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat? It'd probably take your soul straight out of your body.
Okay, not really sure where to go from there. Well, what I can say is that I fell off my puff that night watching Lyle Taylor stick that away, and memories of thinking, no, we're not having to watch these games one camera on the red button for the rest of our lives. And indeed, we have not. Nick, as Arshar mentions there, there's not really any chance for Forest to rotate much, is there? Bristol City knocked out West Ham after a replay in round 3. I was kind of trying to think, well, maybe this is not that important to them either. They're only 6 points off the playoffs, but Liam Manning still getting his feet under the table. Best way to ingratiate yourself with supporters is to keep knocking Premier League sides out of the FA Cup, I guess.
Yeah, and they will presumably see Forest as a bit of a tug, you know, a decent candidate for an upset, you know, fairly thin squad available, players having to play every game for the last few weeks, probably knackered, eyes on other things. I suppose there's a little bit of scope for rotation. I think I would certainly give Brendan Aguilera a go. He's kind of come into the picture out of necessity more than anything else. But he came on against Blackpool, did pretty well. Came on against Brentford and was all right. As much as anything else, he looks like an absolute pain in the ass to play against. Very kind of, you know, very snappy and very keen and making a nuisance of himself. So on the basis that, as we discussed earlier on, keep Callum Hudson-Odoi away from sharp objects of all descriptions, give him a rest and maybe Aguilera a bit of a go. And I'd also be interested to, and we saw it for probably about 20 minutes on against Brentford, but maybe give Nico Williams a go on the wing, because it feels like he is probably a third, fourth choice right back when everyone's sort of fit and available. So you might as well make use of him. And he's obviously got a very good cross on him. When Forrest signed him, basically signed him as a wing back rather than a fullback. So you would have thought he could cope with being pushed on 10, 15 yards further forward. So yeah, not a huge amount of scope for rotation, but I'd give those two a bit of a go.
Are you putting in goal, Arshar?
Oh gosh.
Barry Roach?
Wayne Hennessy?
at this point, like, it feels like Matt Turner is this kind of Charlie Chaplin-esque character in goal. And if he's Charlie Chaplin, then Odysseus Flakodimos is like Buster Keaton or something. Do you know what I mean? And as it is with those two particular people, also young people, if you don't know who that is, if you're young and you're listening to this, find out, right? It would be a good use of your time. But if, you know, with those two guys, I think if they are Chaplin and Keaton, then you kind of know that comedy isn't far behind. And that's not a great place to be. That's not a good place for your goalkeeping department to be, really. I mean, it's horrible when you come on here and you say things like this, but Matt Turner, he just makes kicking a football look really hard, you know? And then Flakodimos just is this kind of, you know, it's just this kind of flapper. And I don't know, it's just the whole goalkeeping department, I think it needs, like, it genuinely needs like a serious appraisal. And it feels a bit like, you know, instead of spending money on one really good goalkeeper, the Forest kind of hedged their bets on two number two, number twos, you know, and it hasn't quite worked out. So I don't know. I don't know. I think it's much of a muchness. Who do you prefer, Chaplin or Keaton, boys?
Buster Keaton, I think, personally. But I don't know. Other candidates who can go cobble cut out of Bruce Samba? Stick that in there. That'll, you know.
I think it'd make the same amount of saves as those two. Sort of stopped clock analogy.
That coffee cup that did for Barry Roach at Derby all those years ago. Could give that a go. I had a chat with Matt Turner and his wife outside Stamford Bridge earlier in this season, and they were the loveliest people you could ever wish to meet, which makes me feel horrible for saying how poor he has been in recent weeks. But hey.
Exactly. It's the whole story as well. I do love his kind of like, oh, you know, I didn't kick a ball until so-and-so age and, you know, oh, I've really had to go through it. I mean, that kind of American story is, you know, it is, you do get sucked in by it. Of course you do. And he fills a sort of Eric Lehigh-shaped hole in all of our hearts. But it's just, you know, on ability alone and sort of surviving in the Premier League and engendering a sort of confidence in a back four or five or whatever we do, it's just not there with both of them. It's not just him.
Well, look, one day we might do a feature on the top five worst Forest goalies of all time. Hiya, Marco Pascolo. But today we are going to finish by talking about who are the worst Forest managers ever. Nice positive way to finish the pod this week. Right, before we start, I'm going to publicly shame you here, Nick Miller. Tell everybody what you put on our group chat this morning.
I mean, I'm being hung out to dry here, listeners. I said... that if I was being edgy, and caveat, it's huge caveats here. If I was being, you know, the outside the box thinker, the kind of edgy character who has a sort of, you know, has a YouTube channel and every video is entitled something like Nick Miller destroys woke blah 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 blah. if I was that kind of person, and I'm not, then the answer I would give to this would be Brian Clough, because he's essentially kind of ruined the expectations of a kind of, you know, what is, before he came along, a middling provincial club with a couple of decent periods in its history, but anything beyond that. But I'm not that kind of person, so I wouldn't say that. I've never been edgy. I don't have a YouTube channel. I happen to think wokeism is quite good. And I don't appreciate being hung out to dry like this. Is it? Our WhatsApp group is private, and I'm very unimpressed that you've publicly shamed me like this.
Hey, come on, Nick. Our group, you know, it's not Las Vegas. You know, what goes in there will come out. Blasphemy.
I didn't tell you what he thinks about Brexit. I'll keep that under my hat another day. Proper contenders, though, Arsh. I mean, there's hundreds of them, aren't there, unfortunately? And they're all from the not-too-distant past. I've got your Megsons, your Kinnears, your Big Rons, your Platts, your McLeishes, your McLarens. Who's the outstanding candidate, or have you got another one in mind?
I've done a top five. Okay. So I'm going to go through my top five. Right. So in at number five, Alex McLeish. And I've written notes next to these because this was quite a last-minute thing. So next to him, I've put for existing, you know, because if he didn't exist, then Sean O'Driscoll would have probably got us promoted to the Premier League and Billy Sharp would be a Nottingham Forest hero. That's the truth, right, guys?
Yeah.
That's exactly what would have happened. It's totally what would have happened. And in at number four, I've got Steve McLaren. And next to him, I've written Burke. And that has a double meaning. That has the meaning that you've just gotten onto, and also the meaning of, I think I remember this correctly, it was Chris Burke who scored one of the goals. It was the game against Birmingham, I'm pretty sure, is when he, so after that he resigned, because we were 1-0 up, I think, in that game, and then it all just sort of turned on its head. And in at number three, I've got Chris Hughton. And next to him, I've written, Dad was strict growing up.
Asher, is this a cry for help? Are you okay?
I feel like that's what you would say about him. If he was your dad, you would say that about him, and it would totally explain everything about him and the kind of football he plays and look, nice guy.
Nice to riff on his pain the day after he's just lost his job as well. I'm sure,
yeah, this, you know, this, we know when to put the boot in here on this pod. But hey, nice guy. We can all agree, very nice guy. In at number two, Gary Megson.
Not a nice guy.
A nice guy. And next to him, I've written, PE teacher, charisma vacuum. I think that about sums him up. And then at number one, I've got Joe Kinnear. And next to him, I've written, just another game. Well, it wasn't just another game, was it, Joe? How did that go for you? I just didn't like his face.
No, he was not very good at winning hearts and minds. It's a close one for me, Nick, between Megson and Kinnear. Megson, I mean, Kinnear's, you can sort of laugh at him in a way, but Megson just seemed like an out-and-out dickhead, for want of a better phrase. Are you plumping for one of those two as the all-time worst? I mean, we haven't given David Platt nearly enough stick in this particular section.
Well, Platt, I had a top four, and I really struggled with the number five. Platt was one of them, but and I was almost dissuaded from it, because if you listen to a lot of the players who had played under Platt, who kind of talked about him in more recent years, they all say he's great. They said he was, you know, a really, really good coach and ahead of his time, and he was just kind of starting to figure things out at Forest when he left, but. Then again, he did sign those three Italians, and he did once get himself sent off at Sheffield United when he was player manager. So, you know.
And he couldn't go quick enough, could he? He always had his eye on the next job.
No. But yeah, my number one was Megson, if only because he was responsible for the two bleakest moments of my Forest supporting life, which were, it was Coventry away in the season that Forest got relegated to League One, which was, I can't remember, it wasn't the penultimate game, but it was that sort of, that suite of horrendous games, which the next one was, I think, Plymouth at home. But that Coventry game was, I mean, the real low point. And I subsequently been told that at halftime during that game, he was so furious, he tried to flip over, you know, those massive massage tables that they have in football dressing rooms. He tried to flip that over in fury, but it was too heavy for him. So he just kind of impotently heaved at this, you know, at this massage table, which, you know, if anything, actually endears me to him, but because it's such a glorious image. But, well, I can't really forgive him for that. And I can't really forgive him for what I think was his last game as well, which was Oldham away, which Boundary Park, famously cold ground.
New Year's Day, was this?
I don't think it was New Year's Day. It was. And I remember it was bloody cold. And I went there on my own because I was living in Manchester at the time and quite reasonably couldn't get anyone else to go with me. It was a Tuesday night. The weather was bleak. I think Ian Breckin had a row with some fans. And then the next day, Megson resigned. So for those reasons alone, he's number one in my rankings. I noticed we haven't talked about Ron Atkinson yet. He was my number two, if you excuse the, you know, which there have been plenty of Forest managers down the years that have driven me to despair, but I think he's maybe him and Kinnear the only ones I've actually been embarrassed that they were our manager. When he got the call from whoever it was who was chairman at the time, he was on holiday in the Caribbean. He finished off his holiday before he came and took the job, which, yeah, it's not a great start, is it? Then there's sitting in the wrong dugout, and then there's the 8-1 against Manchester United. Yeah, he's... And also, it's not ideal to have a racist as a Forest manager, which I don't think he'd been exposed as at the time. I think that was a couple of years later. But even so.
Yeah, the die was kind of cast in that Arsenal game, not just by sitting in the wrong dugout, but also by that Gary Glitter song, "Come on, come on," being played over the PA as he came out, and everybody was handed a paper hat that said "Come on, Big Ron" on it, which is still rotting
Bloody
away
hell.
In my parents' loft somewhere. Just looking back on Soccer Base at Oldham, let's hope we never go there again. I mean, goodness me, 15th of Feb 2006, your game was. Nick, 3-0 defeat. We went there on New Year's Day in 2007, lost 5-0 and had Sammy Klingon and Danny Cullip sent off. So, you know, even if we do get a points deduction and go down this season, it has been worse in the not too distant past. Oh, crikey. Okay, next week, you will know that the transfer window will be gently pulled into the closed position. That means that we're going to release our next show on Friday so that we can catch up with all those late deals that will surely get done. So Friday for next week's show. Until then, you can follow us on social media. We are on Instagram at the Garibaldi Gazette. We are on X, formerly known as Twitter, at the Garibaldi G. And like I say, if you can leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, or just tell somebody about the show, that would be much appreciated as well. Many thanks to Paul Taylor for joining us earlier, to Nick and Arsha for their expertise, to producer Lucy for putting it all together, and mainly to you for listening. We'll be back with you again next week. Until then, it's goodbye.